वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We're reading from the seventh canto, chapter 13, text, which text is it? 11. The title is The Behavior of a Perfect Person. Atrapi udaharantimam. Itihasam puratanam, itihasam praradasya cha sambadam, muner ajagarasya cha, atrapi udaharantimam, itihasam puratanam, praradasya cha sambadam munir ajagarasya cha atrapi udaharantimam itihasam puratanam praradasya cha sambadam Munir Aja Garasya Cha Atrapi Udaharantiman Itihasam Puratanam Atrapi udaharantimam itihasam puratanam praradasya cha sambadam. Atrapi udaharantimam Itihasam puratanam praradasya sambudam muniraja garasya cha Vaishnavis antabhya harantanam itihasam puratanam praradasya cha sambadam praradasya cha sambadam Vaishnavis atrabhyudaharantimam itihasam puratanam praradasya cha sambadam muniraya garasya cha atra herein api although not exposed to common eyes udaharanti The learned sages recite as an example. Imam, this. Itihasam, historical incident. Puratanam, very, very old. Praradasya, O Prahlad Maharaj. Cha, also, sambadam, conversation, mune, the great saintly persons. Ajagarasya, who took the professional of Python. Cha, also. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. As a historical example of this, learned sages recite the story of an ancient discussion between Prahlad Maharaj and a great saintly person who was feeding himself like a python. Please repeat, as a historical example of this, learned sages recite the story of an ancient discussion between Prahlad Maharaj and a great saintly person who was feeding himself like a python. Purport. The saintly person met by Prahlad Maharaj was undergoing Ajagara Vritti, the living condition of a python, which does not go anywhere but sits in one place for years and eats whatever is automatically available. Prahlad Maharaj, along with his associates, met this great saint and spoke to him as follows. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Gaur Govinda Swami Tinamine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschatyari Satarine. Mukam karoti vachalam pangu langayate giri yad kripata maham vande sri gurun dinatarinam. So, and the devotee who's supposed to give class wasn't feeling good, so let's pray for him for his recovery. So I was asked to say something in regards to this verse. We're reading the chapter of the behavior of a perfect person. So this Bhagavad Purana, it is said that it's as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just as the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, and along with knowledge and what is the other part, Archita? This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. It has arisen just the departure. So, accompany religion and knowledge. So persons who have lost their vision in this darkest age of Kali shall take life from this Bhagavad Purana. So here we're hearing about the behavior of a perfect person. And any story in this book, anything being told by great sages and holy people has only one meaning. The only meaning is to enliven, to reawaken our original nature, constitution, as the servants of Krishna, because we conditioned souls have forgotten this. So it may appear sometimes that for some people, oh yeah, these are just mythological stories, or just somebody made it up. But for the Vaishnavas, that's not true. For the Vaishnavas, these are real stories. And Archita, do you remember that verse in the Bhagavatam that says, Grinanti, Yananti, Sadhava? Do you remember the verse in the Bhagavatam that Srimvanti, Gayanti, Grinanti, Sadhava? But the first line? Tadvat visargo yanataga viplavo yasmin pratisloka navada vatyapi Srimvanti, Grinanti, Namani anantasya yasvantam antajat Srimvanti, Grinanti, Salavam. So, yes, that although these literatures, it says that may appear to be written, it says in a humble way, like not accurately, not as perfect, but we know it is perfect. The message of this Bhagavatam, or these literatures, had to mean to create a revolution in the heart of the living entity. So these stories right here are embraced and welcomed by honest persons, by saintly persons, and we derive the pleasure in hearing and the teachings of this Bhagavatam. So right now we're hearing about a personality who was found in the forest as a python, and Prahlad Maharaj is telling the story here. And what we learn from this is that, what I just came to my mind right now is that we actually don't need to endeavor for so much materialistic way of living to get happiness. This python right here is going to be, how do you say, like it's going to shock the minds of these, of the persons who saw him, that he was actually satisfied and happy. And he was not surrounded with so much paraphernalia, which in fact distracted so much. Yesterday I was talking to one person who came here for first time, and by the way, he was met by one devotee who doesn't even live in the community, but somehow or other he was inspired to go out and distribute books. And he said that, I said, how do you get here? He said, well, you know, I met one Russian devotee. I said, really? Who's that? And I didn't recognize, I didn't know who he was. But anyway, he gave him a book, and it's amazing that just by, you know, like by that touch, that, you know, that book, a few lines that he read, immediately he became attracted. He immediately embraced the teachings of this Krishna consciousness. It was very interesting to see that somehow that this person was engaged by some other devotee, inspired to go and reach out for the conditioned soul. So I went and talked to him, and I was very happy to see that someone, not even within, living here in the community, was inspired to deliver this message, to go there and pull out some conditioned soul who is struggling. And he was mentioning that, he says, I don't know, I would like to experience something different in my life. I try so many things, but right now I'm surrounded with so many paraphernalia, so many things that are like making an impediment for me to advance. And I was thinking, yes, that sounds very familiar. I also have so many things. Still, even as devotees, we sometimes think that maybe this thing or maybe that thing can help us. And of course, anything for the service of Krishna, it's all right. But sometimes might not be necessarily like that. So sometimes we learn even from other people by talking to them. They bring all these excellent points of how we should learn how to detach ourselves. See, here the python is the devotee who is considered to be like a python is living just out of Krishna's mercy. And previously we were just hearing about the different kinds of sannyasis or sannyas life. And I remember reading that one first qualification for a sannyasi was, Prabhupada says, that is fearlessness, that he's supposed to be fearlessness. And what does that mean? That you go out and you don't bring nothing with you, nothing. You just go out, you don't arrange like, oh, I'm going to bring this food because what's going to happen, and if I don't have nothing to eat, I'm going to die. Oh, I should bring this to protect myself, maybe a gun or a knife, because if an animal comes, will kill me, I might kill him, like that. So, no. So, fearlessness. And this brings me to, I recall the story of one time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling. He was making travel with his devotees, renounced sannyasis and brahmacharis. And he said, "You come with me, but don't bring anything with you. Nothing with you." So the devotees, so Lord Chaitanya said, "Well, okay." Then after some time, he said, "Are you ready? Are you going to bring anything with you?" "No, no, you told us not to bring anything." So they start moving around the road. And along the road, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu walked ahead. And as he was walking, there was a boy selling some yogurt. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, can you please give me one of these yogurt pots? I want to drink something." He said, yes, please take." He said, "But I don't have any money, but my followers in the back, they can give you, they can pay you." And then he drank. He took all the yogurt. And after some time, when the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got close to the boy who was selling the yogurt, the boy said, "Maharaj, please, I just want to request that my... your sannyas, who is just walking away now, he took the yogurt and he said that you will pay for." And everybody looks at each other like, "What? He told us not to bring anything. What do you mean? Why did he say it like that?" So then the boy says, "Well, anyway," he said, "it's okay. I will accept this, that is just by destiny. I'm going to offer it from my heart to him, gladly. I don't need to be repaid for that." And as soon as he said that, or he did that, he went to his place, a basket where he kept his belongings, and he looked at it, and he was full of jewels. So he was rewarded immediately. And what did he do? He wasn't like any materialistic person or, you know, who will be like, "Oh, look at this." He just said, "I don't need this. If I can get this much from this personality, what? Just imagine, what else can I get?" So he just left everything and he walked with the Lord. And so this shows that actually, if we just have enough faith in the words of the saintly persons, by the reading the stories of the Bhagavatam and by getting some good advice, we can also get rid of so many anarthas, so many materialistic things that are an impediment for our Krishna consciousness. Yes, these stories are real, and they are meant to reawaken our original constitution as souls. We don't need so much. This body that we have is just a vehicle to help us to cross over the ocean of nations. All we need is to control our mind and senses. And right now, I thought that because it's the appearance of Srila Jiva Goswami, I would like to read something. About Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami delineates his genealogy in Lago Toshani, which is his commentary on Sanatana Vaishnava Toshani. The genealogy is important because it embodies the little information that exists about Rupa, Sanatana, and Jiva's familial background. Jiva Goswami's life and work are emblematic of the Vaishnava way of devotion. He dedicated every moment to his mission of codifying Sri Chaitanya's philosophy for the benefit of mankind. To this end, he organized the movement begun by the five senior Goswamis. Consequently, Jiva Goswami is known as the most systematic preacher among the six Goswamis and has at times been called the greatest philosopher in all of Indian history. In fact, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada has commented that the Vaishnavas are by far the greatest philosophers in the world, and the greatest among them was Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu. Jiva was the youngest and most prolific writer among the six Goswamis. In addition, he was the last among them to reach Vrindavan, and consequently, he is not mentioned in any of the early biographies of Sri Chaitanya. Jiva is, however, glorified in several verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita, but even there, it is usually in connection with the other five Goswamis. The little that is known about Sri Jiva comes primarily from Bhakti Ratnakar, which has been quoted throughout this work and another earlier book, although also from the 17th century, called Prema Vilas. This later work was written by Nityananda Das, a student of Nityananda Prabhu's wife, Janava Devi, and it is therefore accepted by many Chaitanyaite Vaishnavas as an authoritative source. Since biographical information concerning Jiva Goswami is scanty, much debate has arisen regarding details. For example, some scholars deny that the year 1513 was the year in which Sri Jiva was born. For Sri Chaitanya met Rupa, Sanatan, and Anupam, Jiva's father, and the younger brother of Rupa and Sanatan, later that same year in Ramakeli. This presents a problem because according to Bhakti Ratnakar, Jiva too was in Ramakeli at this time, and although he was only a child, he was old enough to get there by himself and witness the loving interactions between his uncles, his father, and Sri Chaitanya. How then could Jiva have been born that same year? The only possible conclusion is that either the date of Jiva's birth is merely an approximation which has already been admitted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or that Jiva was an infant of miraculous capabilities. Jiva's ontological position is special. He was considered an incarnation of the gopi known as Vilas Manjari. So supernatural occurrences are not beyond the realm of possibility. Whatever the answer, as Jiva Goswami grew in years, he gradually developed all of the bodily symptoms of a Mahapurush, or an empowered divinity. Scriptural description of such souls includes elongated lotus-like eyes, high nose and forehead, large shoulders and chest, hands reaching to his knees, an effulgence that appears like a molten gold, and other specific features. Bhakti Ratnakar says that Jiva Goswami was not devoid of any of these bodily symptoms. In addition, he was a prodigy, mastering at a young age such subjects as grammar, poetry, logic, and scriptural hermeneutics. As described in chapter 3, Sri Chaitanya had first met Rupa and Anupama in Ramakeli and had had a second encounter that took place soon thereafter in Allahabad. This was to be the last time that Anupama will see the Master in this incarnation. For the very next year, in 1514, while traveling through Bengali on the way to Puri, Anupama passed away on the banks of the Ganges. This devastating event had a tremendous effect on Jiva Goswami, who, although only a child, at the time resolved to renounce the world and its cruelties. Thus, with a burning passion for spiritual enlightenment, Sri Jiva studied the scriptures as he grew into his teens. At this time, he began the worship of Krishna Balaram, the deity forms of Krishna and his elder brother. Sri Jiva saw Krishna and Balaram as non-different from Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu. This period in Jiva's life and the scenario that follow are summarized by author and Sanskrit scholar, somebody's name, Stuart Erkmans. Okay. I don't know if I should read this, but with his father there and his two uncles now settled in Vrindavan, Jiva reportedly lost all interest in worldly pursuits, hoping only to join his two uncles in Vrindavan one day. By the time he had reached the age of 20, his mother was also dead, and he resolved to live the life of a Vaishnava, recluse in the company of Rupa and Sanatan before heading for Vrindavan. Jiva's first visited the town of Navadvip, where he was met by Nityananda and taken to all the places associated with Chaitanya's youth. At the bidding of Nityananda, Jiva proceeded to Benares to complete his studies in Sanskrit learning. Interesting details of Jiva Goswami's trip to Navadvip are found in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Navadvip Dan Mahatmya. From the early age, Jiva desired to visit Sri Chaitanya's birthplace. Jiva's mother did not want her only son to travel and live the austere life of a renunciant. Nonetheless, Jiva conceived of a ruse, I don't know how to pronounce it, R-U-S-E, ruse, by which he proposed that he will go on a short trip to his ancestral home of Faith Havad. His mother agreed, and Jiva arranged for the boatman who was supposed to take him to Hyderabad to take him instead to Navadvip. Once in Navadvip, Sri Jiva met Nityananda Prabhu. As noted by Stuart Ellman, Jiva immediately recognized Nityananda as a non-different from his Balaram deity. "You are the form of the universe," Jiva told Nityananda. "You are Balaram. In fact, you are so infinite that I cannot properly describe your qualities. One thing I know for certain is that you are my eternal master and I am your servant. My only aspiration is the shade of your lotus feet. That person to whom you give mercy easily gets the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya and drowns in the water of love of God. Without your mercy, no one can get Sri Chaitanya, even if he worships him for 100 lifetimes. I therefore prayed for your merciful glance." After glorifying Nityananda Prabhu in this way, Sri Jiva was taken by Nityananda himself on a complete tour of Navadvip. First, they went to Sri Chaitanya's birthplace. Then they visited the famous house of Shivas Thakur, where blissful nocturnal kirtans were once held. They actually met Sri Srivas, who took them to Sachi's house, Sachi Devi and Vishnu Priya. Sri Chaitanya's widow then cooked prasadam for them. Next, Vansivadana, Sachi's servant, accompanied them to the temple of Jagannath Mishra, where Sri Chaitanya's father had worshipped the family deity of Lakshmi Narayan. In this way, Jiva Goswami saw all 9 islands of Navadvip. After the tour of the holy dam, Nityananda Prabhu told Sri Jiva to go to Vrindavan by way of Benares. The reasons for passing through Benares was to locate Madhusudan Vachaspati, an important disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and to take lessons from him. Vachaspati was to become Jiva Goswami's mentor. Arriving in Benares, Jiva Goswami quickly found Madhusudan Vachaspati and accepted his tutelage. In a relatively short time, Sri Jiva became particularly well-versed in all aspects of Vedanta philosophy, and he developed a reputation as an eminent scholar, having written Sarva Sangadini, wherein he refers to such divergent Vedanta Sutra commentators as Madhva, Ramanuja, Shankara, and Vachaspati. He became known as a thorough and well-rounded authority on all branches of learning. To this day, Benares Hindu University honors Jiva by dedicating an entire department to the study of his works. Once Sri Jiva had established himself in Benares, he recalled the instructions of Nityananda Prabhu. While in Navadvip, Nityananda Prabhu had told him, "Go soon to Vrindavan. That place has been awarded to your family, to your father and uncles, by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore you must go there immediately." This recollection, coupled with a burning desire to assist Rupa and Sanatan, influenced him to leave Benares and start for Vrindavan. Krishna Das Kaviraj, author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, confirms that by the time Jiva Goswami was 20 years old, he had gone to Vrindavan and fulfilled the mandate given to him by Nityananda Prabhu. Other than Jiva Goswami's massive literary contribution, not much is really known about his stay in Vrindavan. According to Bhakti Ratnakar, the following devotees, among others, were there when Jiva first arrived, and they greeted him with love and friendship. The other five Goswamis, Prabodhananda Sarasvati, Kashishwar Pandit, and Krishna Das Kaviraj, Rupa and Sanatan, were overjoyed to see their illustrious nephew associating with the Vrindavan devotees. Soon after arriving in Krishna's holy land, Sri Jiva approached Sanatan, his elder uncle, for initiation into the Chaitanya Vaishnava line. But out of humility, Sanatan deferred the responsibility of initiating Jiva to Rupa Goswami. Before Rupa initiated Sri Jiva, however, he decided to test his mettle. To this end, Rupa gave Jiva menial service to perform. He had Jiva prepare articles for deity worship, beg alms, prepare food, research tests, massage his feet, and prepare palm leaves for his writings. Highly pleased with Jiva Goswami's sense of selfless service, Sri Rupa formally initiated him into Chaitanya Vaishnavism. Some months had passed since Jiva's initiation, and a traveling scholar named Rupa Narayan Sarasvati came to Vrindavan. He was well known as one of the most learned men in the country, and it was said that he could not be defeated in philosophy debate. In fact, he was called a Digvijay, which meant that he was a person who had conquered everyone in all directions. His pride, however, was as vast as his learning. And as he went from village to village in order to wrangle with local scholars, he demanded a Jaya Patra, or a certificate of victory, from his opponents. By this time, Rupa and Sanatan were known all over northern India as the greatest of all scholars. In Rupa Narayan's usual arrogance, he rudely challenged the two famous brothers to a debate. When Rupa and Sanatan declined, the proud Rupa Narayan said, "You are obviously frauds. If you were as learned as people say you are, you would both accept my challenge." With great humility, Rupa and Sanatan said that their reputation was exaggerated by well-wishers, and that they were in fact not fit to debate such a learned and undefeatable individual. Rupa Narayan was greatly pleased to hear this. Immediately thinking of his reputation, he asked for his usual Jaya Putp Patra, so he could show others that he had defeated Rupa and Sanatan. Without any hesitation, the two humble brothers signed this certificate and sent him on his way. Blinded by vanity, Rupa Narayan felt that he was now the greatest scholar of all time. He completely neglected the fact that he had defeated Rupa and Sanatan only by default, and that it was their sheer humility that allowed him easy victory. Moreover, Rupa Narayan soon heard that Rupa and Sanatan had a young nephew who was quickly developing a reputation that was equal to theirs. Rupa Narayan knew that if he really wanted to establish himself as the greatest of all scholars, then he will have to defeat young Jiva as well. Approaching Jiva Goswami, Rupa Narayan presented his letter, stating that he had defeated Rupa and Sanatan. Jiva was incensed. How could his teachers, Rupa and Sanatan, who were intimate associates of the Lord, be defeated by an ordinary scholar, or even by the greatest of scholars? Rupa Narayan demanded that Jiva enter the debate with him, for once he defeated Jiva, he said his reputation will be unequal. As Jiva listened to the distasteful boasting of Rupa Narayan, he felt an intense urge to silence him once and for all. Jiva's youth got the better of him. Although his uncles avoided wasting valuable time in some mundane debate, Jiva accepted the challenge. Young Jiva spent 7 days on the banks of the Yamuna trying to vindicate the reputation of his uncles. On the final day, the contest of scholarship was complete. Jiva had won the debate. After this, Rupa Narayan went away in a great shame and was never seen again in Vrindavan. Jiva, on the other hand, was anxious to share his conquest with Rupa and Sanatan. He was especially excited to tell the good news to Rupa, his guru. When he approached Rupa, however, he was severely chastised. "You had prematurely taken to the renounced order of life," Rupa told him, "and consequently you were not able to conquer your anger and sense of pride. No one who rejoices in humiliating others, or who asserts his own worth, is fit to live in Vrindavan. Wow. You are hereby banished, and you should leave immediately." Severely humble, Jiva bowed to his master and quickly left Vrindavan for neighboring Mathura. He took Rupa Goswami's harsh words to heart and practiced great austerities in an attempt to atone for his misconduct. It is said that he lived in the hollow of a tree, ate simple food and only once a day, and took a vow of silence that was to last for one solid year. This exile might have lasted even longer, but it was cut short by the mercy of Sanatan Goswami. When Sanatan discovered what had happened to Jiva, he immediately went to Rupa and told him that he was neglecting to follow one of Sri Chaitanya's cardinal teachings. Rupa said, "What? Which teaching am I not following? Please tell me." To this, Sanatan said, "You recite the teachings of our master. When you get to the one in question, I will let you know." As Rupa patiently recited all of Sri Chaitanya's precepts, he finally came to Jiva Doi, which means kindness to all living beings. Doya means kindness, and Jiva means living beings. Jiva, however, is also the name of Jiva Goswami's realizing the import of Sanatan's curious punishment. Rupa laughed heartily and decided to be kind to Jiva. In this way, Rupa rescinded his banishment. Critics of Jiva Goswami foolishly point to this episode in Jiva's life in their attempts to show that he had acted improperly. Chaitanya Vaishnavas, however, understand that Jiva was merely playing a part in order to instruct others about the pitfall of mundane scholarship. Critics say that Jiva should have been more humble, and that if he were, he would have never been banished by Rupa Goswami. Such critics neglect the fact that if Jiva had not debated with the arrogant scholar, then Vaishnavis would have fallen into ill repute, for the mass of people would have continued to believe that Rupa and Sanatan had been defeated by Rupa Narayan. I think there's many more pages, but probably this is just enough for all of you to get the blessing from Srila Jiva Goswami by remembering his exalted position. And we, as humble servants, were meant to assist all these great personalities. One of the desires of Srila Jiva Goswami was to see that the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be distributed all over the world. And he himself it is recounted in another part of the scriptures that he was instructing three devotees, Syamananda Prabhu, Narottamacharya, and Srinivasacharya. And they were considered to be the first three book distributors, the beginners of book distribution, when they all took the bull of cards with all the books of all the Goswamis and they went to distribute it. And later on, some incident happened where all those books were stolen, and then the story goes on like that. So we can see that if we assist these great personalities, we can get a lot of mercy. He gave them a lot of blessings, and of course the blessings of all the parampara was there. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu originally desired this, that all the Goswamis go there, excavate, found all the holy places, and also to the Goswamis, Sri Rupa and Sanatana, to write books. And then Srila Jiva Goswami continued that in giving and empowering these three personalities, Srinivasacharya and Narottama Das Thakur and Shyamananda Prabhu, to go and give this knowledge all over. So similarly, the members of this Krishna consciousness movement, we have also an order by our Srila Prabhupada to go and distribute the holy name and to go and distribute these books. Harinam Sankirtan Ki, Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu Ki, Gaura Premanandi.